The Coliseum of Combat Sports Interviews, JerryPark.com, has only been around for a few weeks, but already we seem to be making some noise in the MMA world, and we decided to start our first ever MMA award ceremony. And who better to invite to discuss the best fights, the best fighters, and everything above in the world of mixed martial arts than Jeff Thaler of WhaleDog.com and Zach Arnold of FightOpinion.com. I've visited these sites on many occasions, two of the best out there. And first off, I want to thank the guys for joining me here on JerryPark.com.
Hi, this is Jeff. I want to thank you for having us and for even remembering that I have a site, because it's been as long since I updated it. If you don't know, I'm hosting what most people know me for these days is actually I co-host Fight Opinion Radio with Zach. So I appreciate you having me and remembering my site.
Yeah, and I'll appreciate it for being on the show to raise your quarter hour ratings through the roof.
All right, sounds good, guys. So like I said, this is the first annual Jerry Park MMA Awards, and I know we're a little early with this, but I was hoping to get a leg up on the competition, and there's obviously a few events coming up, most notably the UFC event in Newark next week. Then there's the big Wanderlei Silva-Chuck Liddell fight, also Matt Serra, Matt Hughes going down in December. Few Elite XC shows, the IFL Grand Prix, but we'll make our cutoff first week in November. Everyone can decide whenever their cutoffs will be. So let's get right to it. Start off with the big one.
Okay.
Fight of the year. I want each one of you guys to give me your fight of the year in all the five major weight classes. So I'm talking 155 lightweight, 170 welterweight, 185 middleweight, 205 light heavyweight, and then above for all the heavyweight guys. We're not going to work with the Gary Shaw weight classes here. And then when you're mentioning those, give me your fight of the year as well. Zach, we'll start with you.
Starting with me, we'll go at 155, and the fighter of the year I have is Jay-Z Calvin. You haven't seen him a lot if you're a North American fan, but just YouTube his name. You can look at some of his K-1 Heroes matches easily. To me, the fighter of the year in that weight class, he is going to be the most dominant force in Japan for the next 2-3 years, in my opinion. And there's some big money matches coming up. We could see him against Takanori Gomi soon. I really just think he's a beast at that weight division. I think he's much more proven than Chris Horodesky of the IFL. So to me, it's J.C. Calvin at that weight division. And for fighter of the year in terms of 155, I have two of them. Chris Horodesky against Chad Wireley, which was in the IFL. They had that in Seattle, I'd say a couple months ago. I think it was in June, Navarrete. And the other one, of course, Tyson Griffin against Clay Guida. Definitely money.
All right, well, actually, I cheated. I did go with the Elite XC weight classes because fighter of the year is Nick Diaz. My fight of the year is his fight with Gomi at 160, just above that weight class, but I threw it in there. And to me, that was easily the most, action-packed and exciting fight I've seen in a long time. So that is the fight of the year and my overall fight of the year, hands down.
For me, the fighter of the year at 170 is John Fitch. The guy just continues to win. I mean, he just wins again and again, and the win against Diego Sanchez, a big win for him. We'll see how much money he can get from UFC, and we'll see if UFC treats him with some respect here, some headlining pay-per-view material here soon for him. 170 fight of the year for me, Takanori Gomi against Nick Diaz, or you can go with John Fitch against Diego Sanchez from Anaheim.
All right, well, I'm gonna buck the trend again, if that's okay with you guys. Because
no problem.
I don't have a fighter of the year. No fighter of the year at 170. There
wow.
is none. I think it's George St. Pierre, and then he gets knocked out. You know, nobody stepped up in that weight class. Nobody asserted themselves and really stood out as fighter of the year. So although I like the John Fitch and Diego Sanchez fight, like Zach suggested or said, there is no 170 fighter of the year for me. Zach, I mean, do you think anybody really – I mean, if you got a guy who didn't even get a title shot – And it had one major fight, that's your fighter of the year. I mean, that tells you something about the division, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was very tough for me because Matt Serra, of course, would be the obvious pick, but he only had one fight, and that one fight was a pretty incredible fight. But nonetheless, I think to me, Fitch is the consistent fighter of the year in that division.
Let me ask you guys a question while we're talking about the welterweight division. Just yesterday, we spoke to Jake Shields, and he put himself up there as one of the top three welterweights in the entire MMA world. Where do you guys have Jake ranked right now?
Jeff, go ahead.
I got him ranked right up at the top. I mean, it's hard to, when the guys don't all fight each other, it's impossible to know who literally is the number one guy. But Jake is going to be on everybody's list of the top two or three guys. And I've been watching him fight since back in the day, back when he trained with Chuck Liddell and Scott Adams. Scott now owns the WEC, and everybody knows Chuck Liddell before he moved up with Caesar Gracie. And I've seen the guy improve. He's a solid fighter. The way he took out Toledo was, I think, very impressive. Where he mounted him and just dished out the punishment on an excellent jiu-jitsu black belt. He's definitely got to be at the very top of anybody's list.
Yeah, to me, anyone who's listened to Fight Opinion Radio knows we are the home of the Jake Shields fan club. Absolutely. Jake Shields, to me, one of the best fighters at 170 in the world. And I think the reason you haven't seen him in UFC is because he's still got the tag of being a boring fighter stuck to him, which I think is unfortunate. It's the same kind of garbage that Matt Lemon has to put up with, too.
Do you foresee him, Zach, re-signing with the Elite XC, after his fight with Mike Powell this Saturday?
Yeah, I do. I think Elite XC would be the perfect home for him. I think he'd get lost in the shuffle in the UFC.
All right, Jeff, I'm not sure if you mentioned what your fight of the year was in that division.
No, I'm going to agree with Zach on that. I got Fitch and Sanchez, as good a fight as any in that division, and basically an overall, it was a weak year for that division. I mean, truthfully, the best fighter in that division might be Paulo Filho, and he had one unimpressive or not overly impressive fight, and so... This has been a down year for 170, not in terms of the quality of athletes in the division, but in terms of the fights and somebody inserting themselves. And so, I don't see anything standing out tremendously in that division.
Well, there have been some very good fights in WEC, but people just don't think about them. I mean, they don't come to the top of your head. You're not thinking about the 5-round fight Paulo Filho had, or you're not thinking about Uriah Faber. Those names just don't come to your mind. I don't think enough people have seen them.
You know, you mentioned John Fitch, and obviously George St. Pierre is going to be fighting the winner of Sarah Hughes. Do you think that Fitch then deserves the next title shot coming after those guys, Jeff?
Yeah, I do. I don't think that they should throw George St. Pierre right back in for a title shot after one fight. But yeah, I think he definitely deserves a title shot before George St. Pierre. I like the fact, I think George, obviously, I think he flipped up that fight. I think that he wins it, 9 out of 10 times, but he didn't. And he should eventually be able to earn his way back to a title shot. I just don't like the one fight back in the title shot kind of thing. I'd like to see this guy kind of earn his way back in. So, yeah, John Fitch is the next logical, I think, competitor up there, other than a guy we haven't mentioned who I love, and that's Carl Parisian. I mean, he's a guy that's just been fighting and fighting and fighting, and he got injured and lost his title shot, but he's kept at it, and I don't see why he can't be lining up for one also.
All right, now let's move on to the middleweight division. Zach, we'll start with you. 185, give or take 5 pounds here or there.
Yeah, my fighter of the year in 185 is Anderson Silva. I don't think there's an explanation really needed there. Fighter of the year in 185 is going to be kind of a surprising choice. I think Frank Shamrock against Phil Baroni was clearly the most exciting fight, the fight with the most crowd heat. Just to me, it was the best and most entertaining fight in that division of the year.
Well, all right, nobody can disagree with Anderson Silva, right? I mean, he's been almost untouchable at that weight class. The only guys that could beat him are guys that haven't been invited to the UFC or are fighting different weight classes, in my view. So, you got guys like Dan Henderson or Matt Lindland. Henderson, if he'll drop down, I think, could beat him. Otherwise, Lindland has to be invited back, or they're going to have a tough time getting someone to really give him a good shot in the UFC. He's the fighter... definitely the fighter of the year. And you know what? I think his destruction of Rich Franklin, for me, that was the fight of the year in the weight class, because as much as I respected him and knew his game going in, I didn't expect that fight. He destroyed him. It's not a great fight because it was a give and take back and forth, like the Nick Diaz and Gomi fight, but it was a fight of the year for me for just showing the utter destructive power that he had developed.
Looking into your crystal ball, Jeff, do you foresee Dan Henderson moving down to 185 to challenge Anderson Silva for his title and possibly unify the Pride and UFC titles?
I think he will. I saw somewhere that somebody had a rumor that Dan was already thinking of moving down or agreed to move down, and then you hear Dana White, of course, saying that over and over that he hasn't agreed and they're having trouble getting him to agree. But, yeah, I think it's just such a logical move. My guess is that, and this is just my feeling from reading the tea leaves, is that there's contract issues and money issues, and that's why he's holding out, because he knows he's worth so much at 185. But again, that's not based on inside information. That's just how I think I see the way things have gone. And you know, he can go down there. I think, and I think if he does, he's got the exact kind of game that can give Anderson Silva fits. Otherwise, Zach, who would be a good challenger? What's his name? Heel hooked him, right? Flying heel hook.
Yeah, Rio Chonin.
Well, Chonin, right? Rio Chonin. Here's a guy that took his stand up. Actually, took it to Anderson Silva standing up somehow, and then had the most incredible submission probably any of us have ever seen with a flying heel.
Yeah.
Chonin is fighting Parisian next week in Newark. If he wins that fight, Zach, do you foresee him possibly being in line to challenge Silva for his title in 08?
Doubtful. I think UFC doesn't care for guys jumping up and down weight classes unless it's someone that they say they can make a lot of money off of. I don't think they could make a lot of money off this guy.
So that said, I mean, the Henderson situation seems to be at a stalemate. Who do you see challenging Silva next?
Wow. I don't see anyone on the horizon, to be honest. I mean, unless... Wow, I don't know. I don't see the depth there at all. Unless they suck it up and get Matt Wendland, I don't see who they're going to bring in.
All right, something to look out for. Let's move on to the light heavyweight division. Jeff, we'll start with you.
Well, light heavyweight division, I think it's got to be Jackson, right? I mean, this guy came in from to Pride to WFA, and then from there stormed into the UFC, took out Chuck Liddell, took out, or at least beat Dan Henderson, established himself as a major star. And, I mean, Zach, I mean, don't you agree? You could maybe make a case for Keith Jardine, but he didn't fight for a championship, so I got to think that Jackson fight of the year.
Yeah, my 205 for me, Quentin Jackson's number one, Dan Henderson's number two, and Sokochu's number three. Fight of the year in 205, it's Jackson against Henderson from London.
Yeah. I forgot about Sokochu for a minute there, but he had, if you think about it, guys, I mean, what he did just coming out of nowhere with two unbelievable knockouts, that definitely ranks him up there. But again, I'm going to stick with Jackson just because he actually got the title. And there's always, we'll talk about when we get to the next weight class, there's always that little extra pressure that comes, and some people fold and some people shine, and Jackson's shown.
And Jeff, how about your fight of the year in that division?
You know, again, I think I like the Jardine Liddell fight, just because, you know, for years we heard about Chuck Liddell. We've seen Chuck Liddell do so well in kickboxing and knocking people out and playing this game of drawing people in and destroying them. And if you remember, though, if you go back before he went on that huge win streak and became such a huge star, the rap on Chuck Liddell was that his kickboxing was sloppy and he depended a lot on his power, and that, you know, a good kickboxer might beat him. And we almost forgot about that because he was fighting so many wrestlers and so many guys that just didn't have the tools to step with him and hang with him. Now, obviously Jackson did. He knocked him out twice, once this year, but that was so quick and such a I don't want to say flash knockout, because he did have to follow up on the ground, but virtually a flash knockout for MMA. It's hard to call that fight of the year. But to see a guy like Jardine, a guy who was kind of a plodding and awkward heavyweight, a guy who nobody gave a chance to, someone who came in and, you know, I mean, everybody knew he kind of kicked hard, but I mean, nobody thought that he could stand up under a Chuck Liddell. And to see him methodically pick apart Chuck Liddell with the leg kicks, the kicks to the body, and really take it to Chuck, to me, veteran fight of the year award or for that weight class.
You bring up Chuck Liddell, and that leads me to obviously want to ask you guys your prediction on Liddell Silva next month, December 29th, the showdown that everyone, and including Dana White, who seemingly repeats himself every single time he has a chance, that this is the fight we've all wanted to see. Zach, you actually mentioned a couple of weeks ago saying, does anyone really care about Liddell Silva? We'll get to that in a second. First off, Zach, Jeff, who do you guys think? Silva, Liddell next month, who are you picking?
Jeff, go ahead.
I think we agree, Zach, because we talked about it on the show. We both think Vanderlei Silva takes it. I think Chuck Liddell is breaking down physically. I've been saying this on the show for how long? About 9 months, Zach?
Yeah.
Since I saw him in an airport limping and really walking with a pronounced limp, and then I watch him coming into the fight, and you see him right before he comes out the tunnel, he just looks stiff, and I know he warms up for the fight, and he moves well, but, I mean, to me, He's a fighter who's aging. He has a style that seems, he seems to be breaking down. And was to Silva, again, also coming off two losses, just like Chuck Liddell, hasn't looked like a world beater lately. I still think that he's going to be able to take it to Chuck. He'll be able to stand with Chuck, I think, and beat the, and win the fight. But Ariel, I don't have any great excitement about this fight. I think that it's very unfortunate to me that a fight we waited for years is coming together with two guys coming off two huge knockout losses in a row. I mean, this is the most anticlimactic finish I can imagine for the fight. And I know why it makes sense to put them together right away if you're Zuffa, but I really wish at least one of them could be coming off a win, because I'm going to watch the fight. I'm a huge fan of MMA, so of course I'm going to see it, but it's almost sad to see it come about this way.
As far as this fight's concerned, I'm bored by it. I think Silva takes it with little trouble. I think he'll actually outquick Liddell in the ring. I think he'll be a little bit smaller than we expect him to be.
If you go to UFC.com and they kind of show the pictures of what their upcoming main events are, Silva and Liddell are actually the ones that are featured for December 29th and not Sarah Hughes. Does that lead you guys to believe, Jeff, I'll ask you, that's going to be the main event, you know, for the next pay-per-view? Seems like a strange choice.
I think that tells you that Dana White is a huge mark.
Yes.
For fighting. I mean, we're very critical of him on certain issues, but in the end, Dana White is a huge fan. He understands why this was a big fight for so many years, and that's why he's putting this as a headliner, because otherwise, you can't justify it.
All right, before we move to
I think it'll be the semi-main event, but, I don't understand why they're trying to devalue the Sarah Hughes fight unless they're so convinced that Hughes is going to beat him again.
Before we move on to the heavyweight division, Zach, you mentioned Sokaju. Correct me if I'm wrong, but have you heard about who his next opponent's going to be?
There's talk of him fighting Hyordor or Emelianenko. I mean, there's talk of him fighting in crazy weight classes. There doesn't seem to be a real natural fit for him.
All right, so we'll look out for that. Let's move on to the heavyweight division. Zach, we'll start with you.
Heavyweight division. This was a tough category because there's not been many good fights in this category. The heavyweight division, I'll take the fight of the year, is Nogueira against Heath Herring. Just because Heath Herring was such an underdog going into that fight, and he gave Nogueira everything he could ask for. Fighter of the year in the heavyweight division, everyone's going to go with Randy Couture. I guess I should, too, although I think honorable mention goes to Ben Rothwell.
Well, forget about Ben Rothwell. It's Randy Couture's year. He came out of nowhere, retirement. This is a guy that was washed up as a heavyweight because he couldn't handle guys of that size. And everybody thought he was washed up, so he drops to light heavyweight because that was his only opportunity to really remain competitive. He shocks the world, becomes a light heavyweight champ, but then suffers consecutive defeats to Chuck Liddell, and we find that he's really not able to compete at light heavyweight anymore either. He's in his 40s. He's retired. It's all over. And there he is. He comes out of retirement. He takes on the big man, the biggest man in the UFC, in Tim Silva. He's exactly the kind of fighter that gives him trouble. He's big. He can lean on you. He's got good stand-up. And he shocks the world. He wins the championship. And then he shocks the world again when he beats Gonzaga. And so, to me, forget about Ben Rothwell. Throw that away, because there's nobody can even come close to what Randy Couture did this year. And for just complete significance and really the value of the fight, I'm going to go with his fight with Tim Sylvia as the fight of the year in that division.
Jeff, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, your opinion on the whole Dana versus Randy feud. How do you see this one playing out 8 months down the line? Will we ever see Randy Couture fight in a UFC octagon, or do you think he's just going to play out the rest of his contract and hope for that fight against Fedor?
Well, I think that this is Randy Couture. I know we're going to probably get to it in a minute, but Randy Couture is the story of the year. And it starts the story of the year of a huge redemption and rebirth, and ends with this, I guess, just incredible disappointment of him, he and the UFC not being able to come to terms and dropping out without his fighting Fedor, without his really being able to put a period or an exclamation point on the end of his career. You know, he's very wisely has left the door open. So there's nothing that's going to that would stop it from ever going back to the UFC. But so I wouldn't rule that out. But I got to tell you, at this point in time, I think it's more likely we're going to see his contract run. We're going to have to figure out when it actually ends, as we've kind of broken down in detail on the Fight Opinion Radio Show, because there's some doubt based on whether he's retired or whether he's refusing to fight. That can make the contract extend. But I don't see him in the UFC in the short term. I think it's a really sad turn of events, and one that I think was eminently avoidable if the UFC and the leadership was not suffering from such hubris. Because I think if they had just given him a little more attention, forget about the money, if they had given him the attention, I think he would have stayed.
Zach, we're talking about the heavyweight division, and just yesterday the UFC announced Brock Lesnar's first opponent, Super Bowl weekend. It's going to be Frank Mir. I know you're a huge pro wrestling fan. Give me your thoughts on that matchup.
Lesnar, it's a good matchup on paper. I don't know how it's going to turn out in the end. I would expect it to be kind of boring. Lesnar will try to do everything he can to smother Mir on the ground and wear him out so that Mir won't get a submission attempt. I mean, I guess the safe money's on Lesnar, 60-40, but I don't think it'll be as good of a fight in reality as it will be on paper.
Jeff, the other huge headline in the heavyweight division, I don't know if you can categorize it as huge, but it's pretty big. Kimbo Slice's debut in Elite XC this Saturday night. We'll kind of ignore his first MMA fight against Ray Mercer, and this one being the real one, going up against Bo Cantrell. A lot of people are negative towards Elite XC for signing Kimbo Slice, but you can't deny the fact that he's a huge name out there to the casual fan. Wanted to get your thoughts on A, Kimbo Slice fighting in the MMA world, and how do you think he's going to do this coming Saturday night?
Well, you know what? I'm excited to see him fight. I mean, you know, we all get on our high horses and talk about what's good for the sport and what's pure and what's not, but in the end, I've seen this guy's fights on the internet. He looks like a huge baller. He looks like he could be an exciting fighter, and I want to see him get in there with a real legitimate guy, put on the gloves, get in an organization with a ring and a cage and fight under some rules and see what the hell happens. So, yeah, I'm fucking pumped to see this guy fight, and I don't give a fuck. You know, forget all that. Forget all this stuff about what's pure and what's not. In this case, you know what? I just want to see the guy get it on.
So do you think he's actually legit? Do you think he can actually be a force in the heavyweight division?
Yeah, I think anybody hits as hard as he does, and legit. But, you know, he's not tested. He definitely has a shot. But, you know, until someone's really been tested, it's one thing to fight in the guy's backyard against somebody who may or may not know what the hell he's doing. Another thing to get into with the professional fighter under these conditions. But I got to say, I mean, from what I've seen, he looks like he has plenty of skill and the power to get in there and be a force.
All right, well, we talked about Elite XC, and they're one of the new promotions that hit the MMA landscape in 2007. So let's move on to our next category, promotion of the year. Could talk about anyone in North America, Japan, or anywhere in between. Zach, we'll start with you.
Overall, UFC, best work rate, WEC.
Jeff?
Well, there is only one promotion in terms of sort of what's really out there. There's one, and that's the UFC. So their promotion of the year. Story of the year about a promotion, Zach, let's say Pride, right?
Yeah, I think to me the headline of the year is Pride's death, and if you look at it in an altruistic way, you look at Pride's death, it's really led to the whole Randy Couture situation, because if Pride was still around, Mr. Emelianenko would be still the Pride Heavyweight Champion, and he'd be fighting in that promotion, and we wouldn't have had Randy Couture saying that he wanted to fight Mr. Emelianenko.
Let's go back to the promotion of the year for a second. Obviously, the two big ones in North America are the IFL and Elite XC. I use the word big very loosely. Jeff, do you see any chance of those two competing with the UFC, not at the same level, but really giving them a run for their money come 2008 and beyond?
I think the IFL is in deep trouble. So they had a shot. I mean, they had a great concept, which was to take care of the fighters by giving them contracts so that they could afford to train full-time. But they haven't been able to execute. The team concept failed. The schedule they're putting the fighters on, despite the limited rules with no elbows, has resulted in a rash of injuries that has prevented them from keeping the interesting fighters in the show after show. I see that even with their changes, they're making very bumpy road. I don't expect them to become a major force in MMA. Elite XC, on the other hand, is very intriguing, and I don't see them as becoming a major competitor to the UFC in the short term. But they did a very clever strategy. What they did was they went out and they bought all the B-level promotions, or most of the B-level promotions, or made deals with them across the world that are independently profitable. So they got King of the Cage, they got Icon, they got Rumble on the Rock, they got Cage Rage, they made a deal with, what's the guys in Korea, Zach?
Spirit MC.
And these are the promotions where they're going to have the deals, they own all these promotions except Spirit MC, where they have an investment, apparently. But what that means is that they've actually gone ahead and gotten a huge roster of young fighters who are all going to fight for a little amount of money in promotions where they can afford to keep them and build them and earn a profit. And as these fighters get up and mature, they're the talent pool from which the UFC would like to pull, but they're all going to be in the Elite XC talent pool. And now the Elite XC can then begin to promote them up to their Showtime shows, and I'm assuming eventually a pay-per-view payoff. So what they've done is it's been expensive. They've been able to finance it by doing a reverse merger and becoming a publicly held company. But they've done it in a way where it's potentially sustainable, and it's sustainable in a way to build a roster of fighters that can become quite interesting. So they are definitely a promotion that's intriguing.
Zach, obviously the death of Pride was the biggest headline of the year, no doubt. A lot of people would never have saw that coming just a couple of years ago. And it seems as though no MMA promotion in Japan has risen to the top. MMA seems to be in a down period right now over there. Do you see any of the current promotions in Japan sort of, you know, separating themselves from the pack, or perhaps a new one, or is MMA in trouble over there?
It's in real trouble over there. I don't buy into this World Victory Road deal. I don't think it's going to get off the ground very well. K1 Hero is the problem with K1, is that K1's having trouble finding TV sponsors to subsidize those events. So the Heroes events, when they run in South Korea or they run elsewhere, they're having trouble getting those on good TV time slots. So they're having to get them on at midnight or 2 a.m. and usually K1's used to having primetime programming with their kickboxing. So to me, MMA is a very spotty situation in Japan, and I don't see it getting cleaned up anytime soon. Japan has a horrible track record of, when an industry collapses, of cleaning it up and rebuilding. They haven't done it with pro wrestling, and they're not going to do it with MMA.
All right, guys, let's move on to the best show of the year. A few to pick from. Jeff, we'll start with you.
Well, best single card of the year?
Yeah.
Oof. Go with Zach first. I got to think about that one. I hadn't thought about that ahead of time.
All right, Zach.
Best show of the year.
Best show of the year, Pride 33 in Las Vegas on February 24th. I'd say the Heroes card in South Korea that happened in late October was a pretty good one, too.
I'm going to actually end up agreeing with Zach.
Pride 33?
The Vegas card. The Vegas card was actually a pretty big show. And as we look back, and we see that was the last grasp virtually of Pride, and we see Fedor fighting in the U.S. We see coming in. There was a lot going on in those cards that made it worthwhile. So plus Butterbean, right, Zach?
Oh yeah, and. Oh man, Butterbean.
You know, is it sick that we would pick a card of the year that had Butterbean on it? Doesn't that automatically disqualify it if we think?
Butterbean's destruction of Sean O'Hare, that was fabulous.
Yeah, pro wrestling fans loved seeing Sean O'Hare get his ass whooped. Guys, next week the UFC returns to the Northeast and the first time in a long time for UFC 78 in Newark. This card has taken a lot of heat on the internet. Bisping versus Rashad Evans in the main event. Not really one that screams a big buy rate. Zach, what are your thoughts? I mean, you look at the card and there's definitely some great fights there. Just none of them that really jump out, you know, off the page. Are you excited for this one?
They need to move this to free TV. Dana White talks about how he likes to give big fights away on free TV. Well, then why are you making people pay for this card? Because they shouldn't be paying for this card. This is a card for the hardcores. It's not a card that's going to draw a casual fan. And to me, Yeah, it's interesting to see UFC's advertising strategy for this card, because if you look at the promotional videos for UFC 78 for this card, I mean, it's been blood splattering. It's kind of this, you know, edgy promo where they're trying to hype individual fighters but not individual matchups. It's a weak, weak card. And to me, they either should have canceled this or moved it to free TV. I mean, don't ask people to pay $40 for it, because you're going to get the same result as they did with Rich Franklin, Yushin Okami in Ireland.
And let's not forget, guys, that this card points to the failure of the UFC to get a deal done with Tito Ortiz. Because theoretically, we were talking about Tito Ortiz and Rashad Evans in a uninspiring rematch as the headline fight, which I wouldn't necessarily be that excited about. But let's, you know, they can't come to terms with Tito, a guy that they've mistreated and abused, you know, made look a fool on TV as much as possible. And there's a lot of things about this card that stink, and that's just one of them.
What is your take on the whole Dana White, Tito Ortiz thing? It seemed at first that there was a legitimate heat between the two, but then after a while, when you listen to Dana White every time bring him up and say, you know, I don't hate this guy as much as I hate Tito, and he seems to always want to interject his name into all his press conferences, any chance he gets. Zach, what's your thought behind that? I mean, obviously there's some pro wrestling element to the whole feud between the two and that ill-fated documentary that aired on Spike earlier in the year. Do you believe that they really do, in fact, hate each other, or is this just a work?
To me, I think they're very impulsive people. And when you're very impulsive, you live in the moment. You don't live in their perspective. And I'm sure that the time that they say their statements, they hate the guy. But I'm sure other times when they're sitting down, they don't care about the guy, or they don't even hate the guy. I mean, I just think Dana White's a very impulsive person, and you have to be very impulsive to be very much an A-type personality like a Vince McMahon to be where he's at in this business.
All right, so we mentioned Tito Ortiz, and he might actually fall into our next category of most disappointing fighter of the year. Jeff, we'll start with you.
Krolkov.
Yeah, to me this is not even a race.
So
he comes in the UFC, who would he be, Eddie Alvarez? A nobody in a pretty lackluster. I mean, knocking out the guy, ran around, and then after that, just to get taken out twice like he did, including getting just brutally KO'd Krokop style by a Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter. I mean, what happened to the guy that went and swept through the Pride tournament? I mean, that guy's gone. He's a fighter who for years had the rap that he couldn't win the big fight. Zach would talk about it all the time, and after a while, I had to turn to Zach and say, "But Zach, you won this tournament. He won the Pride Grand Prix." And Zach said, "Well, don't really count on that, Jeff." And you were right, Zach, because he came to the UFC and just stunk. And it's terrible.
Yeah, you know, those magical vitamins, and, you know, say your prayers and take your vitamins.
So
like they did in Pride.
Zach, what do you foresee in the future for Mirko? Do you believe that he will actually, you know, the UFC will sever ties with him and he'll kind of try to land in these B-level promotions?
I guarantee he'll try to get back on the K-1.
And fight K-1, you know, non-MMA rules, kickboxing rules?
Yes.
All right, another thing to look out for. And this next category might fall into, you know, maybe a Mirko Krokop fight. We're looking for the most disappointing fight of the year. Jeff, you got any that come to mind?
Oh, yeah, Sean Sherk, Hermes Franca. I mean, they have both guys test positive for steroids in a championship fight through the division of the disarray. Dana White is flushing down years of PR work by slamming the California Commission because he doesn't like the way they're handling his fighter testing positive for drugs, which, you know, if anybody, I guess media doesn't really care, but if you pay attention, like perhaps those of us who listen to this, you would know that that's just a very peculiar stance to take after he spent years explaining how important it was to run towards regulation. I'm just disgusted with that fight, and I think that's definitely the disappointment of the year.
Yeah, to me, the most disappointing fight of the year was Royce Gracie against Kazuchi Sakuraba, which became quite the comedy, the comedy in the circus when you had the DJ Hoppe, telling fans to boo during the fight.
Oh, I was there, guys. I was at that. First of all, I was at that show. I was sitting with Royce Gracie's mom, by the way, during that show, and his family, And who this Gigi Hapa, what a idiotic. He's sitting there yelling to the fans. The fans are bored because it's definitely a boring fight. He's yelling to, he's telling the fans, tell them how you feel. Tell them how you feel. Like, so what do they do? You got, what, I don't know, all 10,000 fans in the 100,000 seat LA Coliseum booing. Terrible.
Are we pretty much all in agreement that event was the worst event of the year?
Dynamite?
Yes, I think so.
The biggest farce?
It was something.
It was not a good event, unfortunately. I mean, Jake Shield won. Good for, we like Jake, but
yeah.
It was not a good event. It didn't go over well. Brock Lesnar lost his opponent. We had Johnny Morton getting carried out on a stretcher. We knocked silly and then finding out that he's filled to the gills with steroids. We had Hoist Gracie flushing down his reputation after years and years after testing positive for steroids in the disappointing fight with Sakuraba, and then saying that he couldn't bother to defend his honor because, you know, he only fights once a year anyway, and he didn't want to waste the money to do it. I mean, just so many things about that show were just terrible. Yes, I think that was the worst show of the year.
All right, let's end on a positive note. The last category for the first annual Jerry Park MMA Awards, and don't hate me for that horrible title. It's just had to throw in my own website's name in there. The fight you are most looking forward to in 08, there are a lot of rumors about some pretty big fights on the horizon. Zach, I'll start with you.
To me, the winner of Sakuraba against Funaki on New Year's Eve is going to probably face Yoshihiro Akiyama in a fight in Japan. That's going to be the first time Akiyama's fought in Japan since the Oil Valet scandal. To me, that'll be nuclear heat, and Akiyama is a very good fighter. He absolutely had little trouble with Dennis Kang, a guy who everyone on SureDog and all the other MMA boards just hyped up as the guy who would beat Anderson Silva. Kang didn't survive Akiyama, and I think Akiyama is really going to be the next ace of K1, just to be a year later after they had initially planned it.
Jeff, how about you?
Well, you know, if this fight comes about, it's not even a fight that's necessarily the best fight, but who doesn't want to see Hicks and Gracie climb back in the ring against Sakuraba? I mean, it's become almost like a freak factor fight. But we got Sakuraba the Gracie killer. We got Hicks and Gracie the legend of the family. I know that it's not like a fight where you're going to say, well, this is like the next Diaz Gomi fight. But in a sick way, it just feels like it would complete something if those two got in the ring and mixed it up.
You know, in the back of my mind, I thought at least one of you was going to mention Fedor versus Couture, but I guess you guys are kind of lukewarm on that one.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that you're looking at 9 months before it could possibly happen at the earliest. You're looking at, as we discussed on the show last week on the Fight Opinion Radio, you're looking at a possibility that the contract's extended. You're looking at a 60-day exclusive negotiating period after the contract ends and a one-year period to make a matching offer. Randy Couture may not be obligated to fight for the UFC again. He may not be be held to his contract indefinitely. I just don't see that him fighting again in the near future.
All right, guys. Well, there you have it. I think our first crack at these awards was a pretty big success. I enjoyed it a lot, and I hope I can invite you guys back to talk general MMA, for every once in a while here on JerryPark.com, and then meet you up again next year for the second annual awards. Zach, you can catch him on FightOpinion.com. Jeff, WhaleDog.com. I know you don't update it that much, but I'm sure there's some great archives there, and the both of them on Fight Opinion Radio every week, which is linked on FightOpinion.com. Jeff, Zach, I want to thank you guys so much for joining me, and keep on writing those blogs. Everyone appreciates it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.